BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm Duncan MacLeod. I'm in Woodmead in Johannesburg to talk to Mark Casey, Africa lead of the technology, media and telecommunications practice at consulting firm Deloitte, about a new report from the company looking at its predictions for the TMT space in 2018 and beyond. The report looks at everything from the future of smartphones to the rise of augmented reality and artificial intelligence. Mark, thanks so much for talking to Tech Central today.
Duncan, pleasure to talk to you.
First of all, tell me a bit about this report. You've been doing it for quite a number of years now. You produce it annually. Why do you do it? And is there any South African input into it?
Well, the South African input is me. although my accent is Irish, I've lived here 26 years. My involvement is I also have a global role. So I look after one of our global sectors being media throughout the whole of DTTL. And of course, media is part of technology, media, telecoms are one of our faster growing industry. So I certainly have input into the topics that we pick and review the content. And of course, I like to look after the emerging markets angle to these predictions to make sure that they're not too biased towards the developed world. But yes, we do it for a reason. It's to strike up really good conversations. So it's not about, you know, trying to be smarter than anybody else with more accurate predictions, although the accuracy rate is quite high, it's about 90%, but it's really about trying to get edgy conversations going with clients on issues that are, you know, most important to them, you know, heart of the business issues. And I think we try and take a bit of an accent on the unusual or perhaps the less trodden path of topics, you know, and we try and spread it between media, telecoms, and tech. But these days, of course, it's so blurred. It's very hard to know whether you're talking to any one business with any one topic. But yeah, well, look, we're excited about them, and we're looking forward to more conversations with clients, and plenty so far, and lots of good coverage.
So how long have you been doing this report for?
17 years now.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, we've got a system. There's no question about it. And we spend a lot of time talking to not just market experts and our own practitioners. We've 20,000 people in servicing this industry worldwide, but we spend a lot of time with executives in our leading clients. So we have a strong sense that, you know, we're on the right path with the topics that really count. Mm.
You mentioned your accent. It's always the Irish, you never lose it. Why is that?
Well, you should have heard me when I got off the boat the first time. But it has mellowed. Right. There's no question. I have no idea. It's like the Scots as well, and yeah, perhaps the Australians. The accent does remain. People find it quite endearing, so maybe I'll kind of keep the balance between my Irish and South African roots now.
So, Mark, let's look at smartphones first, because that's a big focus area in the latest report. You have a look at what the smartphone of 5 years hence might look like and what technologies will be built into it. We're talking about artificial intelligence processors, augmented reality applications, and things like that. Maybe just give us a broad picture of that chapter in the research. And sure. What the average consumer or the high-end consumer, because the high-end consumers are obviously going to be getting the cool features first, but what some of those features will be in Deloitte's view?
Well, first of all, you see, the smartphone, in terms of form factor, is pretty much standardized. I mean, they all really look the same these days, don't they? But under the hood has been the biggest developments. And I guess it's this aspiration to move away from just being a phone to being, you know, a digital, if I could describe it as a Swiss Army knife. You know, in fact, people talk about the addiction that consumers have to phones. First of all, we don't see it that way. We don't see it as an addiction, and it's certainly not an addiction to a phone. It's just the device that drives so much of our lives today. And in fact, in Europe, we've been doing some studies that are just showing that the next wave of digital transformation in businesses is going to be achieved through the smartphone, with the advancements, which I'll talk about just in a second. But, you know, the primary device now for over half the people in Europe is the smartphone at work. Mm-hmm. Now, that is a really important shift, you know, where in the past it was an accessory, but you used your laptop or the desktop a couple of years ago. It is now more than half the people are using a smartphone. And it's not just its basic features, but as I said, under the hood now, the developments around sensors, machine learning, not so much augmented reality. I think that's still a little bit peripheral, but the capability of the device to start working more intelligently is something that I think we're starting to see it already. You notice when you start doing searches for most things, the application you're using just seems to almost be moving at a certain speed, almost ahead of you at times. It may not always get it right, but I think these are just experiments in the processing and chip technology that will just get better and better and faster. So there have been some predictions done on voice recognition. So right now, voice recognition is a lot better than it was 2 or 3 years ago. And so what we can see happening is there'll be a certain point of accuracy. Let's say right now it's 92%. Out of a perfect 100, when it gets to 95, we'll find people will just stop using the keyboard capabilities, stop typing with their fingers. They will use their voice. We can all talk quicker than we can type. Typing is just the means that suited us for so many decades because we didn't have anything better. So there's going to be a point where this device will be the front door for pretty much everything we're going to do. So for the top end users today, they're seeing these functions and capabilities. You can see it in the mapping software. It just seems to know things. When you do for searches, the prompts, the suggestions that are starting to come to you, a lot of this is also enabled through machine learning. But I don't see this being just for the high LSM category. Mm-hmm. The cost of the technology is getting still cheaper. The penetration of smartphones in emerging markets is also climbing at a far more rapid pace than it is in developed markets, which are already saturated. So the average man on the street is now already carrying a device that is phenomenally capable in their lives to uplift them in many respects. And I just think it's going to get better and better.
And of course, I suppose much of the future advances that we're going to see on smartphones aren't going to be actually powered on the device themselves, but will rather be services that are delivered through the cloud. I mean, the voice capability that we see now, it's all delivered through the cloud. You simply upload a small voice clip onto a server, and the server does the grunt work and then delivers the result to you. So you don't even need to have a high-end handset to be able to use it.
Correct. In fact, I'm surprised watching the extent of growth in storage space in the smartphones. To me, these should be tapering off and actually reducing over time to almost nothing, because quite honestly, the cost of being able to store some, you know, pretty sophisticated IP and processing capability in the cloud is the way to go. Connectivity, of course, is making that the traditional, what we used to call client server, which is what we have now with cloud, so much easier. And you can see in the race for cloud dominance, you know, Oracle, IBM, Google, Amazon Web Services, Microsoft, there is just a massive drive to own that space, because that's where the action's going to be in the future. So how could we own the device? And the device format I can see changing too. So instead of, you could see examples of this at CES in Las Vegas now, where, you know, foldable glass there were actually prototype examples there. You could see effectively a phone that folded up and or could wrap around your wrist. So the device is going to become a very thin, both from a technology point of view, but also from a physical point of view, form factor, and it's all going to be in the cloud. I completely agree.
So new types of devices. I mean, smartwatches have been here for years now. Intel just announced, I think it was last week or the week before, some quite exciting looking smart glasses. Google's experimented in the space, not very successfully, but they've certainly experimented in the space. In terms of new form factors, what do you see emerging and becoming really popular over the next 5 years beyond the smartphone?
I would agree. I think glasses, first of all, you have to move with the natural rhythm of human beings. You know, starting to ask them to do something that they don't normally do makes it disrupts the convenience. I actually call it digital convenience 2.0. So people are inherently lazy. So you don't want them to put on something that they don't normally put on. So I do think glasses is the obvious medium for communication in the future. You know, things like watches, of course, is another one. You know, whether people always will wear a watch or not is another issue. But I mean, you know, if there's only one device they need to carry instead of a watch, a wallet, and a phone, if you can make your payments as you can right now. I saw some brilliant demos of this at CES as well, people just making payments with their watch. Then it's making your life easier, more convenient, and with less disruption to life's natural rhythms. I do think that's going to become quite a key factor in the world in the future is this convenience. Because right now, I think there's still too much clunkiness in the world, in the digital world. So there are, and that's because solutions have been developed as components rather than the whole picture. So let me explain that to you in a different way. What I see happening is, like payment engines, to be perfectly honest, payment engines are irrelevant to consumers. They're not interested in payment engines. They're interested in the product they're trying to buy. They're interested in the convenience of buying that product. How it happens is irrelevant to them. So a lot of the things that have been developed need to coalesce around what I call a platform for life.
Yeah.
So the companies that can provide you with a digital experience of what you want to buy, consume, read, see, enjoy, and so on. It must all happen almost as effortlessly as breathing in and out. The background stuff is irrelevant for you. You're not interested in it. So the company that can make that convenience occur, which it is not there yet, there are companies who are experimenting. The lovely example I often quote is Tencent in China, which is really the best example of a digital platform, you know, for life right now. But there are more and more companies starting to go this direction. They're not even just the likes of the Tencents and the Facebooks and the Google, also the telcos looking at the platform concept. You know, it's not about telephony and data and voice. It's about providing a service for life through a world of digital. That's the ultimate outcome.
We've seen, just coming back to the voice recognition capabilities for a second, we've seen the emergence over the last year, 18 months, I suppose, of home speakers, Amazon Alexa, Apple's HomePod, plenty of other examples. Do you think, I mean, certainly perhaps it was 10 years ago, we used to see people walking around with these little Bluetooth devices in their ears to make phone calls. Do you think that's a potential, that potentially could make a comeback as a device where you could talk to your search engine as you do go about your day, have a little device in your ear that talks to you and you talk to it, and you just simply say, well, make an appointment with Mary at 2 p.m. for tomorrow, please, and it'll Google or whatever service it is will use it. Do you think there's a possibility that that could make a comeback? I think people stopped wearing those things because they looked a bit silly, but...
I think it's already there. I mean, the Apple AirPods... What they call the AirPods?
AirPods, yeah.
AirPods is the AirPods. Forgetting the names, but the AirPods have a connection straight to Siri. You tap twice and you connect to Siri.
Yeah.
So just what you're saying, I do think is we will see that in the short term for sure. And I think, I mean, I have a Google Home device, and I find it is quite scary how accurate the voice recognition is. And even at times I'll try and fudge the system. So I'm not going to ask just at night I might say, you know, hey, Google, set the alarm for 6 in the morning. So now I say, hey, Google, hope you have a good evening. Set the alarm for 6 a.m., will you? And it responds correctly. It doesn't matter how I've made the suggestion. Mm-hmm. There's an intelligence level in there that that tells you that this thing is just going to become effortless for us over time.
Should we be concerned about the privacy aspects of this, though?
Maybe it's my age. I am concerned about the privacy of these things. But, you know, the younger age groups do not. Now, whether that's because maybe when I was 15 or 20, I wasn't too concerned about privacy either. Maybe they will grow up and get more concerned. But to me, and there are questions raised about some of the platform groups as they start to assimilate larger and larger data lakes and start to create an amazing powerhouse of information on people, you know, who is monitoring them and who is making sure that that your best interests are being looked after. And of course that has started what I think is like the equivalent of what was military wars in the past, but now there are battle lines being drawn between countries, and they're using regulations as their artillery. And you can see that already from China to the West, from Europe, the EU region to the US, and I think those will continue, partly to look after consumers' interests, but partly because that's the way of balancing power across the world.
We're already seeing Huawei having all sorts of trouble getting into the American market with their smartphones, and the big operators rejecting their technology. So interesting to watch. But one area, and it's unfortunate, where Deloitte doesn't expect a huge amount of progress to be made in the next 5 years is in battery technology. And you know, is there nothing revolutionary on the horizon in that regard? Your report suggests that there isn't. Certainly not in the next 5 years, and that we're going to continue to have to plug in our devices all the time.
And it is frustrating. I mean, we have looked into this. I mean, the lithium-ion battery is just about, you know, the best in class right now, and there's nothing that we can see on the horizon that's going to supersede it. I think the convenience, of course, around how we charge has been enhanced. There's no doubt about it. You know, just traveling around the world, you know, places where you can plug in phones at airports and hotels and so on. And it's now, admittedly, that's a smaller percentage of the population, but it is a huge frustration. I do think, though, that there have been great efforts made by the phone manufacturers themselves to make the processing capability more efficient. Okay, so you know, if the battery has got a fixed life on a charge, you know, how do you just make better and better use of that? You can see the way simple things have been done about how you know, you got the night and day capabilities on the phones, how it will dynamically adjust to light conditions. I mean, those are quite important drain factors on a phone, but also the processing, the chip capability has been made much, much more efficient now. And that's certainly going to help the batteries last a bit longer. But in terms of new batteries, we don't see it. Mm. New form factors.
And I suppose as the size of electronics shrinks, as they inevitably do, that there's more space inside these devices to put bigger batteries in. And we're seeing that trend already.
We're seeing that trend already. I mean, it was interesting when Apple, for instance, dropped the phone jack. I mean, there's no question that there was some space freed up there. You can kind of guess that that must have been well used in the space that's available.
Yes. Okay, let's talk about augmented reality, because it's a big focus in the Deloitte report. Why is AR a big deal in your view? Or is it?
Well, I think this year it's still experimental. But important trend. I mean, when you get 1 billion people, and that's what we expect, 1 billion people to try it once, you know, that's worth noting. The use is still kind of more in the gaming genre and in the social communications, being able to add an avatar or add a, you know, barking dog on its hind legs next to you and so on. I mean, like, these things are, but they're frivolous, but what they're trying to do is get people used to the world of augmented reality. We do see, potential for, you know, enterprise type applications. I've watched and noticed some fascinating things. Maybe for me, things that stood out. So like, I'm really not great using a measuring tape at home, for instance, but like an augmented app, reality app that allows you to using your phone camera, scan a door or a wall, and it actually does the measurements for you. Kind of, you know, there's an augmented reality ruler. I think that's quite useful, you know. I can see augmented reality playing out with a combination of machine vision. So, for instance, in a world where a factory worker is dealing with a piece of machinery and there's a fault. Mm-hmm. Now, machine vision, of course, has been able to use technology to actually look at devices and see what the problem is, been able to actually figure out intelligently what the problem is, helping that worker with augmented reality, guiding them with symbols and signals. Well, you know, you got to take that part out and put this part in and turn this knob. You know, I can see there's applications in that space. There's certainly applications in education, of course, fantastic, and in healthcare too, you know. So there's some time off, maybe another couple of years, but for this year, it's just an important trend of experimentation on a pretty grand scale. But revenue's small, about $100 million is our expectation, which in the scheme of TMT as an industry is a tiny amount.
Drop in the bucket. Is there something that you think is going to drive AR adoption? Is there a killer app looming on the horizon?
Well, I could see in the world of mapping software, I can see an application there for indoor routing and finding, getting from A to B. If you want to find a shop or a person and you're in a shopping center, you know, having an augmented reality kind of guide taking you from place. I can see those sort of things creating more mass adoption. But the gaming one is still, you know, people often dismiss gaming, isn't that just for the young kids? But gaming is a big, it's a big industry.
That's massive.
You know, so there is capability to monetize there. And of course, as people use it and get familiar with it in the gaming world, its application in other fields becomes easier. I often use the example of, I don't know if you've used a product called Workplace for Facebook's enterprise application.
No.
For collaborative application. Absolutely superb. Now, why does it do so well right now? It's because it's got the same look and feel as traditional Facebook for the consumers. So its adoption rate and its use is just faster because it's, I don't need to learn something new. Mm-hmm. That's quite an important point in the human psyche. So if they use it in games, it'll start to get used in education, start to get used in work. It's easier to take it on board.
Ultimately, do you think AR or VR is going to be bigger?
Well, that's a good question. I digital reality, which is what we actually call the combination of the two, has got, I think, potential. I'm also a little bit nervous about a pure digitally immersed world. I'm not sure we've really figured out what happens to the human brain and the human mind when it's exposed in these situations for a long period of time. Certainly the technology to get them there right now, mm-hmm, is, it's not convenient. Come back to my earlier point, you know. I mean, people will do these things as an experiment for a minute or two, but you know, this starts to become a little bit obtrusive, and I have mixed views about its long-term success as a mainstream application that's going to make, you know, companies lots and lots of money. I can't just see it yet, but it'd be that immersiveness, I still think is a problem for humankind. I just don't think it's natural for us.
And in the video game space, I mean, people spend 10 hours in front of their computers video gaming.
They do. And I think that aspect of being immersed in a digital world is, look, it's a powerful medium for gaming. And it makes a lot of money, for sure. Mm-hmm. And it's got a big audience. But I, again, I worry about the long-term side effects of, you know, people sitting immersed in the gaming world. Even if you're in the e-game fraternity and you're or sorority and you're out there making money, which people do, by the way, I worry about that in the long term. I've got my sense.
It cuts you off.
It does. There are some unintended consequences that we may only discover. And it's like with the rollout of 5G and with connectivity and speeds that we haven't seen before and the use cases that emerge that we haven't thought of because we're not in that sort of world. Mm. I worry about humankind where we just suddenly become immersed in the technology and lose track of who we are and where we are and who we're with.
Yeah.
Down the line.
I have friends who are hoping to upload their brains onto the internet before they die and become virtual beings. Who knows what's going to happen in the future?
I find, though, it's quite interesting when I look at, with my global role, I do travel a lot around the world, and you find in, like China, you know, the world of living in the idea of living in virtual worlds and gaming has a lot of cases been spawned by the one-child policy.
Right.
So, you know, the idea that where you and I grew up and we can kind of, you're out in the streets and you're playing with kids and, you know, interacting. Mm. If you're living in densely populated cities and you're living in apartments and you're on your own as a child, you just start multiplying out by the population. There's a lot of lonely children who this became their escape, this became their thing, how you interact, how you create an alter ego in a digital world, you know, that spawned a lot of this.
Yeah, and when you put a virtual reality headset on, it becomes all that much real, I suppose.
Exactly. Mm.
Just coming back to AR, though, who do you think is going to lead in this field? Is it going to be the big tech companies? Are we going to see new players emerging?
We're already working with a number of the biggest tech groups in the world on partnerships, in fact, in what we call digital reality, which is the combination of AR and VR. So I can't go into details on this, but they have both a consumer and an enterprise focus. But these things are very much, you know, there have been labs set up, there have been use cases developed, there have been prototypes. These things are still experimental. But it certainly is the normal candidates you might expect to be trying to get into this, you know, this type of experience with consumers. And a lot of it has to do as well with trying to build this community, keeping their community in the digital world loyal to them. Because this is just another offering, another way to keep people with them as opposed to going to their competitors. Mm.
Do you think the social networks like Facebook are going to drive a lot of this? Has AR got huge potential for those companies?
It's additive to the experience available today. It's, to me, this loyalty thing is really important. A lot of these companies like Google, Tencent, Facebook, even the likes of a Netflix, companies such as, in fact, there's a range of telcos as well. What they're saying is, look, we want to build this platform. Remember I mentioned earlier on about this platform. And the platform is being less married or wedded to the products or services, more wedded to the idea of loyalty of customers and agnostic of products and services. So whatever works to keep the community together. So the experiments done in the digital reality world are trying to just add to the loyalty factor. So these things are means to the end. The end in itself ultimately is the loyalty of fans in the digital world.
Who has the eyeballs and...
And that's all that counts. Mm.
Another big focus area, Mark, of the report is on machine learning. What is that exactly, and what should South African businesses know about it?
Okay, so chip technology that we're used to, CPUs, central processing units, we're all familiar with. Well, I mean, the graphic processing unit, the GPU, has been perhaps an underutilized piece of technology, certainly the latent capabilities in it are now being tapped into. So, I mean, you'll know from any experience we've had in playing games how, you know, there's a lot of firepower running behind those games in terms of processing capability. Well, that chip technology is being tapped into. And what is happening is now there's code been written onto those chips. And what as a result of that is that the code is also learning. It's designed to improve itself based on what it's seeing. So there are, what stood out for us this year is that it was like a fourfold increase from 2016 in machine learning pilots been launched by companies, okay, to see, and I think I mentioned earlier about like machine vision. You know, the idea of having a scene, a visual scene, being recorded or looked at online by a computer, being able to recognize who's in the room, recognize what clothing they're wearing, recognize if this thing is out of place. You can see the security use cases that could be applied. But some really, really interesting applications have been developed, like in the field of call centers. So imagine talking to a call center agent, but now you've got a visual interaction. It's not just audio, but that call center agent is actually a robot. But they're looking at you. They're able to observe your eye as it blinks, your facial expressions, the sound of your voice, and they're able to interpret all the time your mood, and they're able to reflect back to you. So it becomes like a more human experience. That's been driven by machine learning. And we just see the first of all, the data centers, to your point on cloud. So the data center purchases of machine learning chips has also dramatically grown in the last 2 years, and we expect to at least double by 2020, together with the pilots. This, we think, is going to make that intelligence layer in computing increase quite significantly.
So where is it leading to, and how? What are some of the other examples of how South African companies might apply it?
I think, look, to me, I've always been a big proponent of education in the digital world. I mean, what Africa, as never mind South Africa, just lacks is a great educational system. Now we've got the chance to have a digitally delivered world-class education system in a way where you really can connect with students. Okay, so instead of just having a video played of somebody talking about a topic, you can actually have a teacher interacting with voice recognition, with all the human behaviors through that interface that I've just described. You can actually see the entire continent being uplifted in a way that could never have been done before, and now can be done very cheaply.
Okay. The report also expects in-flight connectivity, which I thought was an interesting one, to become big over the next few years. I know that not everyone is going to be thrilled by that idea, but what's taken so long for it to happen, and what does Deloitte think is now changing to allow it to take off, if you'll excuse the pun?
Well, the connectivity between the terrestrial telco infrastructure and the technology now on the planes has just taken huge leaps forward. So in the past, it didn't really work and it was way too expensive. Mm. So these things just get better and cheaper. The desire to remain connected is strong enough to make these things commercially viable. Right now, there's about a third of aircraft around the world have got IFC, and we expect it to grow. We don't have much of it here at all. We've hardly anything, in fact. But in other parts of the world, it's very, very commonplace. In fact, I think this year is the year we pass the magical 1 billion journeys with some form of connectivity. And I think, I mean, airlines are making money out of it. I think, again, it's the magical number. We like these numbers, like a billion. So it's like $1 billion, which is not a lot of money. But what you can see is an airline's, their in-flight entertainment systems, which cost money to install and maintain, and the content, they will go away eventually, and we will all just use our own devices, consuming our own content in the way we want to, which is again the point on convenience. So it's just another example of connectivity and communication just getting better, and making these facilities just more feasible that weren't there a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Will we ever be able to escape our connections in the future?
Well, I mean, see, that's the problem right now, you know. I mean,
Is it a problem?
Well, I mean, because I travel a lot, I used to get those, what I thought they were periods of escape. But now people know they can send you emails. And people have tried to get me on conference calls. And I said, listen, I mean, that really is pushing it too far, you know. But maybe we'll end up with conference rooms on airplanes. Maybe if you do need to take a call, you can do that. And then, of course, you know, I have no escape. So I have mixed emotions about it, I must say.
I actually know people who, when they go away on holiday, leave their smartphone at home and simply take an old feature phone with them, that so they can still be reached via SMS or phone call, but that's it.
That's right, or disappear off to Nepal or someplace like that where there's just, you know, not too many masts around, so you've got that convenient excuse. Yeah.
Great stuff. Mark, if anyone else is interested, or anyone is interested in reading more about the report or reading the report itself, it's available on the Deloitte website. I'll include a link in the show notes with this entry. Mark Casey is Africa Leader of the Technology, Media and Telecommunications Practice at Deloitte. Thank you so much for talking to Tech Central today.
Thanks, Duncan.